The United States is not a superpower in the Persian Gulf anymore. Sorry to break the news to you guys, but you have basically abandoned so many of your different bases. Your military footprint is a fraction of what it was before. Just on that basis alone, the United States is an incredible weak position in the region. So even if all of this degrading is taking place, and even if the United States are racking up these great numbers and stats about all the people they've killed, all the boats that they've destroyed, all of the infrastructure and things that they've ruined in Iran, where is this going to be in a year? Or are the Iran, is Iran going to like wave the white flag at Christmas or after the midterms? Is the U.S. going to be in a stronger or weaker position? I can only look at the record, Daniel, and the relative spectrum here is that the United States is just increasingly weak in the region going forward. These are irreversible tectonic shifts in geopolitics and power projection in the region, and nothing is going to reverse it. The cost of projecting power in West Asia has gone up at a time when the United States is increasingly more bankrupt and unable to manage this, along with all the other escapades and smash and grab operations throughout Latin America that this administration and Greenland or whatever Trump administration are planning to do next. So it's all great. You know, it's a great highlight film. It's very impressive. Love the videos and the dash cams from the F-35s. But like, what is that going to put you in a better position in 6 or 12 months or 18 months? What are you going to do in 3 years? You guys still going to be trying to play this game in 3 years? Daniel, the most economic option is a negotiated settlement and the U.S. basically backing out of this, stop doubling down on this ridiculous tactical portfolio that they're pursuing. That's the only economic position for the U.S. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be more losses, more cost, and they're going to embolden the region to make it more and more anti-American and anti-Israeli. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
And I want to go down that path. I'm glad you brought that up because something happened last night that I found particularly egregious and actually made at 11:30 last night. I made a short show after something that I discovered later last night that I think tails in exactly to this issue you're talking about, where is degrading our reputation. When we say things that are self-evidently untrue and people can see with their eyes that it's not true, that by itself diminishes belief in whatever else comes out of our mouth. But when they see stuff like this, from CENTCOM on their official X accounts from yesterday, I think that it even does things worse. First of all, this was at about 4:30, I think, p.m. in the afternoon. We said that the U.S. has disabled a non-compliant vessel in the Arabian Gulf. And we said that the Krakow-flagged Belima transiting international waters toward Karg Island, the commercial vessel, ignored multiple warnings as it attempted to violate the U.S. blockade. A U.S. aircraft disabled the vessel after firing a Hellfire missile into the ship's smokestack. Now, when you take a look at, first of all, at the map of the region here, Karg Island and the Arabian Gulf aren't even where our blockade is. So no one was trying to run the blockade. That was just in international waters heading to their own port there. And for some reason, we decided we wanted to go after this commercial vessel that was not blockade. 5 hours later, that same Central Command posts this and says the U.S. forces struck Iranian command centers, air defense sites, missile and drone capabilities, and coastal surveillance facilities to further degrade Iran's ability to threaten innocent maritime crew members, commercial vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. So on the one hand, we brag and openly claim we attacked a civilian vessel that wasn't trying to break the blockade. It was just transiting its own waters, not the blockade, and we shot it. And then hours later, we say that we shot Iran because they were threatening civilian vessels identical to what we did, except in those cases, the ships were transiting, breaking their blockade in the southern corridor of the Omani waters. So how is that viewed when we have such radical and dramatic, in-your-face, hours apart, contradictory statements like this?
Well, the world is certainly, the Iranians aren't going to take the U.S. seriously on the face of anything they say, and they shouldn't. And they've already said as much officially and publicly. But you know, in terms of the rest of the world, any law-abiding nations following the UN Convention of the Law of the Seas or international law are going to look at that and realize that actually, no, it's the United States is very risky. They're attacking commercial ships. The U.S. doesn't have the right to administer traffic in the Strait of Hormuz or to run a blockade in the other adjacent oceans. They just don't. And legally speaking, Iran and Oman, there's no room for international daylight for international waters between those two countries, territorial waters anyway. So Iran, having been attacked by the U.S. and Israel, is fully within its right under international law to administer that waterway how they see fit, because they are at war. Okay, the United States, it has declared war on Iran. And so Iran has been attacked by Israel and the U.S., and they will administer the strait however they want. And it's within their right to do so. You can't attack a country, start a war, and then turn around and then complain about the blowback and the ramifications of your own actions. But that's what the U.S. is attempting to do. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And a lot of countries are looking at Washington right now and thinking, you guys have really lost the plot on this. And, you know, I see the vice president on the Joe Rogan show, and it's just sad that, you know, his main concern is clearly campaigning for 2028 and not really dealing with the substance of this issue, because we're looking for people to, like, actually engage in the actual issues, because the president's not engaging in the issues. The president is out in la-la land saying the stupidest, crazy things on True Social, talking about a 20% global tax on all commercial activity through the Persian Gulf. I mean, what is going on? Where's J.D. Vance? He's, instead of bringing some levity to the situation, he's making up stories about what's happening, the MOU and negotiations. So, like, where's the leadership coming from? We've lost the vice president. We've lost the president. Go ahead.
That what I can tell you is from one of the other government officials from the White House, Stephen Miller, he wants to put his spin on top of this. And if the idea is for the United States to actually find a negotiated settlement, to try to find a way to end the conflict, to get the Strait of Hormuz opened up so that the flow of oil goes back and helps the global economy and therefore the American economy, if that was actually our goal, then we would be saying things along that line to try and smooth over these issues and let's have a conversation. Let's have a talk about it. Let's re-engage with paragraph 5. What does it actually mean? Do we have any comments? That's what we would do if that was our interest. Instead, here's what Stephen Miller says is our interest.
There are elements in the country, in the government, that are desperate to make a deal with the United States. And we entered into an agreement that the Iranians violated. They attacked commercial shipping through the strait, and President Trump made clear, you do not cross the United States, you do not violate an agreement with the United States, you do not break your word with President Trump or America, and you attack shipping in violation of that agreement, and you will pay a hellish price.
Okay, so we obviously attacked civilian shipping. We just pointed that out. We had, according to the MOU, to release energy sanctions on Iran. We did that for a while, and then we took them back off, and then we added some new ones on. We were supposed to release frozen funds. We didn't do that. We were supposed to make an account for $300 billion reconstruction fund. We didn't do that. But otherwise, we did everything. Well, actually, we did nothing. What do you make of that?
You left one out, Daniel. Didn't you hear the latest? They said, no, there's not going to be a 20% tax because the Gulf Arabs are going to invest $2 or $3 trillion, who knows, into the U.S. economy. I heard that one. You remember that 18 months ago on the trip to Qatar when the women were spinning their hair around? Donald Trump declared victory and said all this direct investment's going to come to reheat the U.S. economy, which is the hottest economy on the planet. It's running hot, all right, Daniel, but on the inflationary side, but that's another conversation. But that's the fallback position. It's just one of these, they're now into the recycling phase of recycling these sort of excuses and talking points. So the Arabs bailing us out with investment ain't going to happen. I can tell you right now, they're not going to be throwing money at the U.S. economy. They'll be throwing it into emerging markets where they get an actual return on their investment, but it's not the U.S. Top U.S. Investor gurus are saying, don't invest in the U.S. economy right now. They're saying, invest in emerging markets. So, I mean, sure, I'm sure that if one thing, the Saudis and the Gulfs are very smart about where they invest their money, I can tell you that for sure. And it's not going to be in the United States.
Certainly not in those numbers here. But one other thing that Miller had to say there, it kind of circles back to something you said a second ago, that we don't seem to be interested in any kind of negotiations or anything else. Miller, in that clip we just showed, was basically saying, we're looking for surrender. I know we signed an MOU before. Actually, we don't want to do that now. We just want you to do what we tell you to do, even though we do none of the stuff that we tell you. Who cares about that? We want you to do what we're telling you. And if we don't, he continued on and said this.
One way or another, whether it be through bombing, whether it be through the blockade, whether it be through economic strangulation, whether it be through global pressure brought to bear, any or all of these things, one way or another, this country, this regime, will ultimately be forced to change its ways. It's going to happen, Sean, and President Trump has the strength and the fortitude to see it through to his conclusion.
Okay, again, I can ask, why did we sign the MOU in the first place? Why did we do the ceasefire in April before? If that's the case, then we should have went through there. Now, I don't know if we've already gone through that deal where we, all right, let's retool and reload and whatever, and then we'll go back in. Maybe that's what this is. I don't know, but there is no diplomacy in his voice whatsoever. This is just either you do what we say or we're going to destroy you. But I got to ask, Patrick, can we succeed at that?
I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence in it, in that happening, because first of all, what are Stephen Miller's qualifications for talking about sensitive foreign policy issues? I mean, he doesn't even have a law degree, and he was the head of America First Legal, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, he's practically chief of staff or deputy chief of staff of the White House. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So what he's doing is putting forward this Walt Disney Aladdin style, Disney-like caricature of Iran, Iran's politicians, their society, their government, which is completely divorced from reality. And so he's there on national TV, and of course Trump's base and the Fox News, the average Fox News viewer is going to lap that up.
By the way, I think he's more like Jafar than I think he is Aladdin. But anyway, continue
Aladdin
on.
Jafar, yeah. Or that type of, you know, the Matt yeah. Mullah or the genie or whatever, yeah. But yeah, Miller is in a class of his own. Let's to give him all due respect in that sense. He's in his own special lane. But look, the rhetoric and all this stuff, it seems like desperate. There's a lot of desperation. J.D. Vance, when he was doing the Rogan interview, I know you covered this ad nauseum, but I thought it was interesting, the thing that stuck out about that. This is the vice president, mind you, who believes he is the heir apparent to the White House at 41 years old, currently, but in 2028. He said that Iran is divided between the crazies and the hardliners, and that there's this imaginary epic battle going on within Iran of crazy religious people who believe in the return of the 12th Imam, and then the pragmatists. So the hardliners and the pragmatists, and there's some kind of major clash there. You know, it's just this depiction of Iran. By the way, everybody in the government in every negotiation position is practicing Shiite Muslim. Okay, so there is no daylight between all these different supposedly warring factions in Iran. That's the first thing. But the fact that J.D. Vance was trying to portray the Persians, he's always saying the Persians. Again, that's the Aladdin Disney-like caricature of Iran. It's the nation's called the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's not Persia. But anyway, it kind of shows you where they're at. They're really desperate, and they're trying to throw out quite a few distractions. They're constantly pivoting. They're all over the place. Vance is all over the place. Trump's all over the place. Vance is also covering for Trump because he can't show disloyalty because he doesn't want to be impaled publicly before the opportune moment when he will throw Trump under the bus, which will come sometime around 2027 when they look at the polls and realize that, Vance, if you don't jettison yourself from the MAGA train, you're going to the bottom with Trump's legacy. And so he will have to, at that point, throw Trump under the bus. Listen, it's politics. No surprise there. That's going to happen. But but we have a real genuine crisis here, Daniel, foreign policy-wise, geopolitically, and economically for the U.S. It is very much an existential potential threat for the United States if you think about the instability involved with the current policy trajectory. So, you don't have anybody who is able to transcend any of this and show actual leadership or character within the current setup of the Trump administration. So this is really difficult. We're looking for somebody who's going to be able to, you know, between Rubio, Vance, Trump, Miller, this is a lost cause. You're looking at an absolute circus here. They were wrong. They're on the wrong footing from the very beginning, and there hasn't been a mea culpa. Instead, they're all basically covering for each other and then spouting out about Iran can't have nuclear weapons and whatever. That will be the talking point next week or whatever. But it just doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. And you look at then the statements from the Iranians and you look at the Russians, even the Gulf Arab states sound much more sane, level-headed, grounded, and pragmatic than Washington at the moment. This is not good.
So let me ask you a final question here. You saw Keith Kellogg, you saw Admiral Cooper, you just saw Stephen Miller. I mean, all just pounding the desk about how we're going to win, and they're either going to submit or they're going to go down and we're going to take it, whatever, through military means. But we interviewed and talked to Suleiman Ahmed, who's out of UK, who was also there on the ground during a lot of this funeral ceremony. And he said something that really got my attention. I wonder if you saw anything similar in your journeys throughout this same period, where he said that so many of the people that he talked to at all the different stops that he was allowed to go through, he said that even if they lost like up to half of their population, they said that they would never submit to having a situation like you described a minute ago, where later on you'll come back and hit us again with another war. They say, no, we want to keep going here no matter what, and we'll suffer whatever we have to include millions of people dying potentially, as long as we end up where we finally have some peace because we have vanquished our opponents here. So my question to you is, when Miller and Kellogg and J.D. Vance and ad infinitum and Trump himself are all saying, basically, we're going to use our great military and coerce the Iranian side to do what we want eventually, will the people allow their government to even make that kind of a deal? What do you think?
No, and I don't think they will not make any concessions to the United States. They've publicly said as much in no certain terms. This is not going to happen. They've been under sanctions, targeted assassinations, subterfuge, currency attacks on their actual currency for 47 years. So do you think that they're suddenly going to cry uncle after 50 years when they have the upper hand geopolitically against the United States? I mean, Daniel, the judo move that Iran has pulled since February 28th is astounding by anyone's historical measure or any geopolitical analysis, that they managed to completely, they're not even on the par with the U.S. militarily or Israel for that matter, or Turkey or anyone else in the region. So how have they been able to flip the leverage over what are clearly more powerful conventional political and economic forces? They have, but they have, and they've done it very, very carefully and very, very strategically. Do you think after all of that that they're going to submit to Stephen Miller's will, no matter how flustered and overheated he gets when he's making these proclamations? The answer is absolutely no. Not only that, but the religious disposition of Iran, their faith implores them, and this is one of the things that Americans probably don't understand or become so cynical that they don't believe that anybody could have such deep-seated principles. It implores them to take the moral positions that they're taking against oppressors and bullies, basically. That includes defending the Lebanese, the Palestinians, the Venezuelans, the Cubans, or whatever. That's literally, it's practically, not in those exact words, but enshrined in their constitution, more or less. Okay, so there, that is the religious element of Iran. It, at the core of their whole political economy, is built around that. It's not an adjunct, bolt-on separation of church and state. So it's really important people understand they're willing to go all the way. They're willing to make major personal, family, and national sacrifices. That's a reality. And that's why they've survived as long as they have under the most crippling sanctions, under the most devastating economic attacks, and also military attacks by the United States. Not only standing on their feet, Daniel, but have reversed the leverage. There is no way that they're going to take sort of wave the white, hoist the white flag. It's not going to happen. This is a delusional idea by people in America that have just lost the plot. They've been so detached. They've been reading Israeli propaganda and listening to the likes of Stephen Miller and all these other Israeli proxies that are all over the U.S. government and media. And that, so they have a, just a completely warped sense of reality when it comes to the region, West Asia, and of course, especially with Iran. They're the most demonized, dehumanized population in the history of the planet in terms of propaganda. Everything they tell you is the opposite.
Other than maybe the Russian.
Maybe.
Listen, and the thing is, I mean, you can spin things left and right. You can pretend all you want, but what you can't do, you can't print oil, and you can't produce oil and natural gas, et cetera, out of thin air. And if you can't get it out of the Persian Gulf, at some point your spin is gonna drop like a rock on your foot, and we're going to be in trouble. And I think that that's where we're heading, because the landscape you just described, we're not going to be able to get there. We're not going to be able to talk our way out of this one to somebody who is committed to staying for it. You know, we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.